Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of Exploring Entanglements. Today we will be speaking on the sexual assault chapter and some things as well as like the effects of alcohol on sexual assault, the sexual geography of things and how sexual assault ties into sexual citizenship. So to begin, I just want to kind of outline what role sexual assault plays in this. So when speaking of sexual assault experiences, it's often very difficult to address sexual assault because of how varied those experiences are. And this chapter does a really good job of explaining the different experiences that you can have as far as sexual assault and why it makes it so difficult to kind of address it as like, you know, an umbrella term, because there's so many things that goes into sexual assault. One of the things we want to talk about today are, you know, why does so much of social life in college revolve around drinking? Some of this, I guess I can touch on, you know, just being a college student. If you, you know, just thinking of like the movies about college experiences, most of them involve like binge drinking. And, you know, before I even was a freshman in college, I knew that that's what college students do. Like, I knew college students drink because, like, you're not in high school anymore. So you drink, you go to parties, and you do that type of stuff. So at least for me, I knew going into college that drinking was going to be a big part of my experience.
Yeah, I can attest to that as well. I remember my first day, or I guess my first weekend moving in, we had our little orientation, and then we kind of got the chance to get situated in our dorms and stuff. And I remember I did end up going out the first night because I was like, this is the college experience. This is what I should be doing, or like, this is what my friends want to do. So, I mean, I also wanted to do it, but like the group mentality, you know, and I just like jumped right into it as soon as I got here.
Yeah. So I think like a lot of like going into college does revolve around like this like big whole thing of like drinking. And you know, most campuses, I think Westchester is a dry campus, but I know there are some campuses that I don't even know what's the term for, like, I don't know, like a wet campus. but I know like Westchester is at least a dry campus, but you know, there is often like a lot of pressures when it comes to drinking as a college student, because a lot of the times, something that the book mentions is like pre-gaming. Like, that's a thing. That's like a big thing in college, because we know that our campus is a dry campus. It's, you know, one of the places where I think most people drink is their dorms, like, even though it's not allowed. But I think like because, you know, we're able to like hide it and stuff like that, like, I think one of the big spaces where people do often drink is their dorms, because they know like, okay, well, I'm pre-gaming here. At least this is like a safe space for me to drink, as long as I don't get too drunk and start acting crazy in the hallways and stuff. Like, I think obviously like your dorm is like a big space where you would drink, and that kind of makes it like, you know, sometimes it puts a lot of pressure on you to drink because you're in the small space most of the time with very few people. And so it's gonna make you feel like, okay, well, everyone else is drinking, so like maybe I should drink. And just even going to a party can be intimidating. And you know what they say about alcohol, it's like liquid courage and stuff. So I think also that kind of influences a lot of like why college students might be like more inclined to drink.
Yeah, I know, like, especially like with this idea of like pre-gaming, the whole goal of it was kind of to get as drunk as you can before you go out, because you never know, like, especially like if you're under 21, like if there will be alcohol while you're out, or if you'd be able to bring it or something. So like the whole goal of that is just to like pre-game so that you're actually like drunk before you leave your house. I know like that's a like a big pressure, especially having other people around you who are doing the same thing. Like, you're kind of like looking to them to see what they're doing, and then, you know, adjusting or like shifting what you're doing to fit that. I can definitely say like I've experienced that, where like my friends are coming over and we're gonna go out or something, and like we're all just trying to get as drunk as we can before we leave. And that definitely, like, looking back on it, does not seem like the safest option, but it that's definitely true of going out as an underage college student.
Yeah, and I think that especially like freshmen, because it's like you're just coming out of high school and you're obviously not 21 yet. I think that's like a big thing with freshmen especially, but also just college students in general, because drinks are expensive, you know, and like Dana mentioned, like you never know where you're going to go. You kind of want to like, you know, make sure you're lit before you go, because drinks are expensive. And if you don't have, if you can pay like, you know, this cheap bottle instead of paying like $6 for a drink, like that's another big thing with like college students, like pre-gaming, like nobody wants to spend more money than they need to. But also something interesting that I was reading was that a lot of college campuses, the book mentions how people who really like benefit off of like the lack of consequences of binge drinking are really like white male students, because number one, like say they get super drunk, they don't really have to worry about the degree of the consequence they can potentially get if they had like a different identity, because they are a white male student. They don't really have to worry about like expenses for like the ambulance if they happen to drink too much, you know? So I think that's something big to think about. Like a lot of the times, at least from my experience, Dana, you know, you can kind of talk about this, about your own experience, but at least for me, I will say that I definitely see a lot more like drunk white guys than anybody on campus. Like for me, at least, I think like that's like the biggest kind of like population that I think has a lot of like binge drinking, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, and I can reflect on personal experiences I've had or like people that I know. I definitely agree with like, it's mostly like the white frat guys that you see that are getting like super drunk, because I feel like they don't have to worry about, like you said, like the repercussions or the consequences of their actions. Like not even if they need to go to the hospital or something like that, but like, say if I were to get super drunk, like I would worry about my well-being and my safety against like other people that I'm around. Whereas I feel like men and white men specifically don't really have those same fears. But along the lines of like facing, I guess, the consequences, I can say my brother, I think his junior year got caught in his dorm with, and he was on a dry campus as well. He got caught in his dorm with a bunch of bottles of alcohol and stuff, and the campus police basically just showed up and asked him to just dump them. And then I think he had to go to like one almost AA type class or something in response to that. So he didn't really face a whole lot of like, I guess, consequences, where I think the cop even said to him like, oh, you're lucky, like this would be a so-and-so like dollar fine, blah, 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 but I'm going to go easy on you. So I think, yeah, there's definitely differences in experience across the board for not only having like actual, like maybe legal or like hospital bill type consequences, but also like the consequences that women might face if they drink too much.
Yeah. And I think that's like so crazy, because we know, would that have been like a different person? Maybe it would have gone like a different way. Because I remember even the one time, one of the RAs like called public safety on us, and they were like, hounding us, like going through all of our things. Obviously they asked permission, but like, you know, it was me and my friends, and we all happened to be minority women. So it was kind of scary. Like they were going through all our stuff, and we knew like we're not even doing anything, you know? So imagine if like we did have like all these bottles in our room and stuff like that. I really do wonder like what would have happened to us. We probably would have got like a fine or something. So that is really crazy. Just like, you know, as far as like the comfortability of drinking, I feel like your identity does have a lot to do with that, because they also mention how like white frats are more likely to drink than like you know, like historically black fraternities or multicultural fraternities, just because they know that the consequences would be different. Like for example, over what was it? I don't know if it was like primetime quarantine or not, but I know that there were still some like white fraternities having parties on campus. And I remember there was this one fraternity, I'm not sure which one they really were, but I think they were a multicultural one. And they tried to have a party and it got shut down before they even had it. I think like the day before, because they were like, no, like there's no parties on campus. But meanwhile, you would see like all these like day parties, like, you know, like just walking around Westchester, like you could see them. And they, you know, they were like white parties and stuff. So it's just crazy because I do think that, like, you know, your identity does have a lot to do with like your comfortability drinking, especially like binge drinking. Cause like, you know, we don't want to be walking around campus all like drunk and stuff, knowing like, okay, he's going to see me and I'm going to get in trouble. Like, I feel like that has also a lot to do with it.
Can also say from my experience, I've seen a lot of like day parties or things like where people are just like gathered on a lawn or something, like driving down the street. And especially like even recently, like when I guess things are a little bit more relaxed COVID wise, but I definitely still see it out, and it's mostly all white folks that I'm seeing at these parties. And I think it's interesting that this party or event that was hosted by a historically multicultural group got shut down before it even started. I think there's something there to like ask, like, why are certain groups being policed more, and like how does that happen within Westchester?
Yeah, exactly. So that's like definitely something to think about when it comes to like, you know, like binge drinking. But also something else I wanted to mention was like, you know, like freshman year, you think like it's going to be like, you know, your first few days you go, and then it's like, boom, you have all of these like sexual assault programs and alcohol prevention programs and all like that. And so honestly, in my opinion, you know, they try to make it fun. They try to like invite speakers that are like more engaging with like, you know, alcohol or drinking prevention and stuff like that. But it's still like, you know, freshmen are so eager to just get into the college experience. Like, I remember my orientation, the first few days where you have to like go through all those like trainings and stuff, or prevention programs. I remember going to them and I was just like hating it, because I just remember being like, why am I here? Like, this is so boring. Like, I don't know. I feel like we know this, or, you know, but obviously there is an importance to it. And so I think as far as like those programs go, what I remember is seeing like at least the person that was speaking to me was like, I don't know, like a middle age like white guy speaking to me about the college experience. And so yeah, he tried to make it kind of funny, you know, like as far as like alcohol prevention and stuff like that. But I do genuinely feel as though if it was like a student, like an actual like junior or senior that can tell you like, look, man, like, listen, this is the reality of drinking, and you're gonna do it and you need to be careful, because that's basically what the speaker was saying to us. He's like, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you don't drink, because you're a college student, you're going to do that, but I want to tell you how to do it like safely and how to be careful about it. And so I did like retain most of what he was saying and stuff, but like I said, like it's like what, like hundreds of freshmen sitting in like an auditorium listening to it. And so I do think personally, like if it was like an upperclassman telling me, somebody I can physically see around campus, I feel like maybe that would have like impacted me differently than, you know, an actual like speaker. I mean, I know they do like their own research and stuff like that, but I don't know. It just seems so like teach, like here, just make sure you're careful drinking and stuff like that. But knowing, like hearing like other college students' actual experiences, I feel like that is more impactful for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I mean, hearing these things from somebody who like is close to the experience, and like somebody who is still going through this experience, like an upperclassman, like you said, is definitely, I would say, more valuable and more, like, I think they would have a better reach towards the audience. Like, I mean, even us, like, we're peer educators, and the goal there is to kind of connect more with the student body to, I guess, spread our information and do our work. And I think that would be really beneficial if they tried to maybe bring in like student speakers and people who actually like have been to the frats that the freshmen might be going to, or like somebody who's actually like lived through like the Westchester experience to be able to, I guess, kind of give advice or like even just relate, even the same information, maybe it might just get through a little bit better. I would definitely agree with that.
Like, I, you know, I've only been at Westchester. I was transferred, so I haven't been there too long. But I know at least for, like, my community and, like, who I hang around, I know a lot of, like, places where, like, you know, social drinking and stuff is involved. Obviously in your dorms, but, like, the Purple Gym parties, like, for homecoming and stuff like that. Like, you know, as mentioned before, we have, like, different tailgate locations for, like, different communities. But at least for me, like, a big part of, like, where, you know, drinking and, like, being social and stuff is involved were, like, the Purple Gym parties and, like, you know, like, the historically Black fraternity parties, because, like, that's just, like, you know, like, where you feel comfortable drinking and stuff. And so, at least for my experience at Westchester so far, those have been, like, most of the places where I have seen, like, drinking and, like, social life being involved. And, like, now that I'm 21, you know, unfortunately, we're not on campus, so I haven't experienced the bar life yet. But I will say that I'm a little, like, not nervous for it, but I have heard that some of these bars at Westchester are, like, racist. So I'm just thinking, like, do I even want to go bar hopping in these Westchester bars? But obviously, like, a big part of, like, being, like, 21 in Westchester is going to these bars. So at least for me, I haven't experienced that yet. But where I have, like, experienced, like, party life and drinking and stuff are, like, the Purple Gym parties for sure.
I definitely, so I made friends with, like, I mentioned last episode, I kind of made friends with all the people that were on my floor at the time. And since we've grown apart, but they were all very interested in rushing sororities and doing things like that. And I was not so much interested in that, but I was very close to the, and, like, they were white, so I was very close to the white sorority and frat situation. So that was mostly the places where I would go, is, like, the white frats. And I just remember, like, it's just a dark basement is all it is. It's a dark basement. It's sweaty. And there's a bunch of people down there. I remember I would never look at anyone other than my group of friends. Like, I just didn't really feel comfortable. Like, I didn't want to engage with the frat guys. I just kind of wanted to drink and dance. And that was just the space that was available to me. Although I don't think I would choose to go back there at this point. Again, I'm also 21 now in quarantine, so I also have not experienced the bar situations in Westchester. But from my standpoint, I guess when I was going to frats, I remember being, like, super excited about going to the bars because, like, it wasn't going to be, like, a weird frat situation. Like, I felt like that because these buildings were frat buildings, they just kind of had a different feeling to them, if that makes sense. Like, I just didn't always feel super safe there just because of everything that you hear about frats and things. And also just, like, being surrounded by a bunch of men was not always the best. So I remember being excited about going to the bars because I thought that it would shed all of that weirdness and do things like that. And it was just, like, you and your friends going out to have fun. Like, you didn't have to get past some chat at the door or something like that. But I haven't really heard anything about the bars being, like, racist. And I'm not surprised by that, but it's just interesting, like, from my perspective and, like, I guess the people that I've associated with, I just haven't been exposed to that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I haven't gone myself, so I, like, wouldn't be able to really say. But from what I've heard, like, I guess I shouldn't say racist, but, you know, my personal opinion is if you have a sticker in your bar that says, like, Blue Lives Matter, I'm going to think something about you. So I guess I shouldn't say racist, but it does make me a little, like, nervous because, obviously, you know, all these slogans and stuff are, you know, they have meaning behind them. So I think that for me, like, I think that's just, like, an open, like, invitation to, like, all these people that are also, like, Blue Lives Matter and stuff. And so I think that's why I'm just a little bit like, okay, like, do I even want to go somewhere that has a sticker like this? Like, you know, but Dana, like you mentioned, like, a big part of just this whole college experience is drinking. And a lot of the times, yeah, you're going to feel uncomfortable because there's like all these guys around. And sometimes, you know, like things can happen that you don't want. Like, you know, like you're just dancing or whatever with your friends. And then boom, here comes like this ugly guy behind you and tries to like dance with you. Like nobody wants that, you know? And that's why it's like so important to when we're talking about like sexual assault in college, there is a big chunk of it that has alcohol, you know, involved with that. And so I want to share a story about this girl in a book. And I apologize if I'm saying her name wrong. I think it's Jiyoung or Jiyoung. But, you know, basically she was speaking about how, you know, she was this confident sexual agent who wasn't afraid to go up to a guy and, you know, be like, hey, you want to go back to your room? And so, you know, she explains that like one night, you know, she was really drunk and she approached a guy at a bar. And so she suggests to him, like, you know, like they go back to his place. And, you know, she was saying how like during the intercourse, it didn't feel good anymore. And she tried to convey that to him like through body language. But one thing she says is that he like wasn't responsive to her body language. So, you know, a big part of campus and drinking is the potential for there to be like, you know, sexual assault happening. And so alcohol has like this really big like involvement with sexual assault on campus. And so a big part of what Jiyoung was explaining was, you know, the self-blame that she was experiencing. You know, she mentioned saying like it was a mistake to go up to the person just because you wanted sex. But, you know, a lot of the times, you know, sexual assault survivors tend to have like this self-blame aspect. And so, you know, it's really important as college students to be able to know, you know, to be able to have the resources to effectively communicate what it is that you're feeling. And, you know, it's very valid that sometimes you'll feel like, okay, it's awkward if I just say like, no, stop right now. And so like a big part of like this, you know, of being a sexual assault survivor is dealing with like the, oh, like, is there something that I did wrong? And, you know, that's very unfortunate because it's honestly never their fault. Like, you know, there's never nothing that they could have done themselves that, you know, would prevent the other person from doing that to them. And so a big thing of what she was mentioning was like, you know, blaming herself. And that's like such a common pattern for sexual assault survivors.
I think a lot of the reason why people try to self-blame or like turn it back on themselves after experiencing situations of sexual assault or harm in that way is because I feel a lot of the media is kind of pointing towards the woman. Like you hear people saying, oh, well, like, well, what were you wearing or how much did you drink or other things like that, trying to kind of put the blame on the survivor rather than recognizing the situation that they were in and that like maybe they didn't feel comfortable communicating the no. Like it seems like in this one student story that you're referencing, like she was trying to convey that she was not comfortable through her body language. And I feel like that ultimately just like falls on the I guess the partner in this case would be to recognize the body language and like maybe take a moment and be like, hey, is everything okay? You don't seem okay. I think body language is a really valid way to communicate with other people, especially if you feel like you can't use your voice. And I know a lot of times in these situations, it's hard to use your voice and it's hard to kind of stick up for yourself.
So yeah, it can be very difficult a lot of the times to know how to communicate to somebody that, you know, what's going on, like you don't want that anymore. And so the book mentions like some reasons that one might blame themselves and like all these different stories that they mention. So some of them are, I shouldn't have gotten that drunk. I should have told them that I was a virgin. Or in some cases, in this, like this story that I just mentioned, they were the ones to pursue sexual contact, but then they ended up getting sexual contact that went beyond what they wanted. So, you know, these are like some reasons that people have blamed themselves, but ultimately you should not blame yourself for other people's actions. And so it's when we're talking about sexual assault, you know, it's very important to recognize the role that alcohol can have as far as sexual assault. And so, you know, saying I shouldn't have gotten that drunk, well, you know, the other person should have realized that you were drunk and that you weren't able to make this decision by yourself. And even if you did pursue sexual contact first, that other person should have known that that's what you wanted, not what they wanted. So they shouldn't have tried to give you more than what you pursued in the first place. So, you know, the self-blame aspect of sexual assault can be very, it can play a really big role as far as, like, you know, your healing process and just unpacking everything that happened. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not your fault at all. Because yes, there are some things like body language that should be picked up on and words that should be picked up on. But at the end of the day, if you're communicating that and people still are not being responsive to that, then it's completely not your fault. Throughout the book, you know, there are several stories where, like, somebody's sexual citizenship hasn't been respected. And so a really important quote that I wanted to share with everyone is that we must think about sex as something to share rather than something to get or to have. And so, you know, thinking of sex in this way, you know, the author mentions that it may go a long way to prevent these kind of interactions. So thinking of sex as something to share rather than something like to take from somebody can be really important just for all future interactions and stuff like that. So I think that's something very important to, you know, think about. Like, you know, sex shouldn't be something that you pursue just for yourself. It should be something, an experience that, you know, you share with other people.
I love that idea of, like, sharing sex. Like, this is an experience that you're sharing with another person or other people. And I feel like it kind of, like, introduces this idea of, like, this is a collaboration. This is something that you're doing together rather than, like, I want to have sex. I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like when you're sharing, you are considering the other person in that. I like that a lot, to kind of reframe the idea of sex in our minds as, like, something that we are working on or sharing with somebody else. I feel like kind of reflects back on the whole idea of sexual projects, is that it's something that you're working on, something that you are collaborating on maybe with other people. I think, yeah, this idea also, I feel like, really shows the idea of sexual citizenship as well, because in the idea of sharing, you're thinking of other people involved. Like, that's also kind of moving towards recognizing that they are also an agent in the situation and have choice, they have options, they have the right to say no whenever they feel uncomfortable. So I really love that. Thank you for picking that out. I missed that.
Yeah, and I thought it was just, like, a really great way of thinking of sex, you know, moving forward, because, you know, thinking of sex as something to share rather than something for your own personal taking, it is, you know, it does incline you to respect everyone's sexual citizenship and make sure that, because this is a shared experience, you're making sure that you're both enjoying it, or that you're both not enjoying it, or that somebody's enjoying it and somebody's not. I'll share another story with everyone about a girl named Jessica. And so, you know, she mentions how during one encounter, she got very drunk and ended up having sex with a guy. And she didn't really want to have sex with him, but she ended up having sex with him. And so she mentions that, you know, reflecting back on it, she knows that her sexual projects usually involve having an ongoing connection with somebody that she likes. And so in this case, you know, where she was sexually assaulted, she didn't have a connection with him and she didn't even want to have sex with him. Looking at your sexual projects, you know, it's important to know, like, okay, this is, I want a connection with somebody. And if that's something that you want, then that's something that that other person should respect. So, you know, obviously casual sex is a thing. And if you just want sex and that's it, then that's fine if that's what you both want. But if you want, like, a deeper connection with somebody, then that should be respected both ways, you know? This is the last story that I'll share, but there is this girl named Charisma, and, you know, she was speaking about her sexual assault experience, and she mentioned how she took her sexual assault experience as a lesson about her sexual project. And so, you know, just like a lot of learning, it does take some struggle and repetition to master anything, like, you know, that you're learning or your experience. you know, she mentioned that she, in her sexual project, she wanted somebody who recognized her as a sexual citizen, or who recognized her sexual citizenship. And so that's important. You know, we should all strive to recognize each other's sexual citizenship in all of our, you know, sexual encounters. And so because, you know, she is reflecting on her sexual assault experience, she knew for, like, herself, like, you know, I want somebody who's going to recognize my sexual citizenship and respect if I don't want to have sex, or respect if I do just want to have sex, or if I want a deeper connection. And so, you know, like, this aspect of sexual citizenship and sexual assault is very important, because if you recognize each other's sexual citizenship in each other, and you recognize, like, okay, this person has a right to say no, and this person has a right to say no in the middle of sex, or before sex, or after sex, like, and so I think that's very important, you know, to recognize everyone's sexual citizenship. The book mentions, like, assault as being contexts where one person is inattentive to the other person's right to sexual self-determination, which is their sexual citizenship. So, you know, in thinking of your sexual experiences, you know, it's important to be attentive to the other person's right. And so, you know, body language or words, or, you know, however they choose to communicate that, it's important to be attentive about it, because, you know, I think it is kind of, like, obvious when somebody's body language is saying, like, no, I don't want this. And so, you know, it's important to recognize each other's sexual citizenship.
This reminds me so much of Planned Parenthood actually kind of gave a cute little like graphic acronym idea for the idea of consent, which I refer back to all the time because I think it's so great. So the acronym is FRIES. And that stands for freely given, reversible, informed, enthusiastic, and specific. And I think that is the most comprehensive idea of consent that I've seen thus far. And I think, like, the idea of it being enthusiastic goes back to showing body language that might not show that you're interested, or, like, in that one story where she was kind of, like, not feeling it, or, like, maybe it, like, wasn't feeling good, or she wasn't enjoying it, and trying to convey that through her body language. And if you see body language that is not enthusiastic, you might want to second guess. But it also gives the idea of it being reversible, which I think is great. Like, that just because you consent to one thing does not mean that you consent to all things. But yeah, that's my favorite idea, or I guess little acronym for consent, because I think it's very comprehensive.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's first of all, a really easy thing to remember, like FRIES, like, you know, that's something easy to remember. But I think, yeah, it's important because it touches on kind of like all these aspects of consent. And it's really important when, you know, like you said, enthusiastic, like if somebody, you can obviously tell if they're not really feeling the situation, or if they're like, yeah, I'm pumped, like, you know, let's have sex. Like, you can tell when somebody's into it and when somebody's not. And so as far as respecting each other's sexual citizenship, it's important to be attentive to these things like body language, or, you know, contact or words and stuff. We wanted to touch on these topics because it's a very real thing to think about as a college student. And so, you know, I'm thankful that we're given these spaces where we are able to talk about this stuff, because, you know, moving forward, we learn better ways to communicate with our partners, and we learn better ways to just realize what we want ourselves. And so I think that this was, you know, such an impactful chapter. And I think, you know, it's information that we can take with us forever. And so, you know, I want to thank you all for tuning in again to all of our episodes.